You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff. Something is wrong with me.
To be so cynical.
Practice. Welcome to another edition of Positive Cynicism. I am your host, Chad Smart. You can find me on Twitter at Chad Smart. It's very simple, very easy. Even if you just Google my name, it will come up as like the fourth thing, as I found out recently during a networking seminar training session. So if you click on the link above the Twitter about the CFA or CPA or whoever, that's not me. Chad Smart at Twitter. As always, I encourage you to check out the other shows here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, Nerds United, Five Hearts, and My 123 Cents. It is the start of the month as I record this, the beginning of November. I am joined once again by the newest Positive Cynicism co-host, Travis Yates, who is on Twitter at PopCult, C-U-L-T-I-Q. That is correct, right, Travis?
That is correct. I don't know how easy I am to find via search, and I don't know if there's a certified public accountant out there with my name on it as well, but yes, that's how you find me.
Perfect, perfect. So, and I realized going forward with our series that we're going to be discussing, you have pop cult, which I'm hoping stands for pop culture and not a cult about dads.
Let's hope so. I am a dad, so you never know.
Yeah.
Do you?
But you have pop cult in your Twitter handle, but you and I are going to be discussing more social and real world, I guess, situations. Whereas, like, the series that we're doing now is going to be kind of a two-part series. And next edition, I'll have Eric Bennett back on, who does more of the movies, comic books type pop culture references. So, you know, really should have probably thought this out better, but.
Well, you know, you still have to have a good understanding of popular culture to understand society, where we've been, where we're going. So, you know, there's still some things that apply there.
That is true. That is true. And I rely on your professorship. Are you, I should have asked this before, but are you Dr. Travis Yates or just Travis Yates?
Oh, well, technically, I'm Master Travis Yates.
Okay.
More Jedi-ish. I like it. No, I have two master's degrees, but my wallet could not handle a PhD at this time.
Okay. But Master Yates just sounds a little suspicious if you don't pronounce it correctly. But
you know, I'd be in a cult, so. Oh, yes, Master Yates. Time I picked up on that.
Yes. Have you ever seen the movie The Toy?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
If you don't get the reference, just look up the character names on IMDb for Jackie Gleason and Scott Schwartz and realize that Richard Pryor always calls him Master. So, anyway, Travis, I had this idea. I've been listening to a podcast called 80s All Over. I don't know if you've checked it out yet, but it is two guys going basically month by month through the decade of the 1980s. And talking about every movie that came out in a specific month. And I really like the show because it brings back like memories of movies that I've forgotten about. But one thing that has been, I kind of prickle at times is, especially like right now as we record this, they are up through halfway through 1984. And so in the early 80s, you had a lot of teenage sex comedies, exploitation films. And whenever they mention one, a phrase that they often use is sex crime, because of the kind of exploitative nature of the films that were being put out at that time, which I totally understand, but I feel like they're looking at these films from 30, 40 years ago through the now standard that we have in 2018. And then coupled with that, a few weeks ago, I was at Politicon, which you can go back in the archives and listen to my review of Politicon. And one of the panels that I was attending, they were talking about illegal immigration, and one of the panelists, a liberal female comedian, Hispanic, made a comment about how the white man came in and, you know, took over America, basically. And it just got me thinking about how we judge things by the context of today. And so I'm going to start with the taking of America. And I would say that, yes, we can look back at history and say the way that this was done, it is not appropriate, it was evil, it was barbaric. But at the same time, I think no matter who had settled into America first, coming from a foreign land, would have probably done the same thing, given the nature of the European colonies were more advanced than the Native American culture. And if they found this new land that had one land to take, I just think that the same thing would have happened no matter who landed here first. What's your take?
Yeah, certainly exploration and conquering was happening long before that happened here with the Native Americans. And this is such an interesting topic, Chad, and when you brought it up to me, I started putting down a lot of different ideas on paper to kind of just get my thoughts organized. And, you know, one thing that popped into my head that I think sums up how I feel about it and how I think is a good contextual way to look at it in general is, you know, this when we look at smoking, mm-hmm. and what you hear oftentimes from either former smokers or even, you know, older people who still smoke are, well, we didn't know the dangers back then. Mm. And, you know, it's true. You had doctors that were in commercials for cigarettes. So, I mean, talk about not understanding the dangers of a product and then, you know, and using it and then being misled. And so I think that that's a fantastic approach when judging past actions. You have to look at what the social norms were, what information was available to the person or people at the time, you know, what factors weighed in on the decisions they made at that time. You know, certainly bad decisions have been made because of bad intel and or bad reasoning that seemed very sound at the time. So, you know, certainly we can't, you know, discount or excuse some very poor, bad decisions from the past, but we also have to look at the whole context of it. What information did they have at the time, you know, and what the social norms were. So like the example you gave of, you know, how America became American, how the white man conquered, that was happening everywhere. So you're right. If it wasn't the Europeans, it would have been some other, you know, nation likely that did what was done here.
Yeah, and I think, too, looking at it, when we try now with, like, we just recently celebrated or passed Columbus Day, which here in California has been changed to Indigenous People Day. It's, and we look recently at, you know, wanting to remove a lot of Confederate statues or monuments. I think trying to erase that part because of the negative actions or, you know, not trying to glorify people, I can understand the reasoning why we shouldn't celebrate them, but I think by trying to erase it from history is also a negative effect because then we don't have the chance to learn from that past behavior.
So I'm a teacher, obviously, and I have a vested interest and a front row seat in how we as humans learn. And one key way that we learn is by mistakes. And we have to acknowledge the mistake in order to learn from it. And if we just simply try to erase it, we're not only doomed to repeat the mistake, but likely setting up the next generation to make the same mistakes that were made in the past. However, I think there's a way to to find an agreement of the two when it comes to things like removing, you know, Confederate statues. there's also some, you know, the present day has to be considered sometimes. You know, there's certainly so much offense that is carried and the connotations that go along with those statues. It's how we use though that as a teachable moment. If we are going to remove a statue, then instead of this giant, you know, political debate and ugly discourse playing out on our 24-hour news networks, can we as a society use this as a teachable moment? I don't think right now, as politically fractured as we are, we can do that. But in a perfect world, you would like to see that. And I don't think it's erasing. Certainly, there's a lot of history has been whitewashed, erased. We can talk. We can do a whole podcast on the validity of Columbus Day and what that actually means. But, you know, there's other things like the removing these offensive statues that probably should be done. But then how can we use it as a teachable moment versus just, oh, it's gone. Nothing ever happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm going to jump off there because talking about Confederate stuff or statues and people, another kind of growing movement is even downplaying the significance of people like George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, because they were slave owners. And I know slavery is another issue that, again, we can look at in 2018 and say it was a terrible blight on America's history. Never should have happened. All men should be created equal, as Thomas Jefferson said, while owning slaves. But again, look at the context of the time and say, okay, were slave owners bad people because they owned slaves, or was that just the culture at the time and they had large plantations, needed workers, this was what was done, and then try to judge, look at the individual as either, and I know this may be a controversial statement, but either a good slave owner or a bad slave owner who did abuse and treat slaves inhumane.
You know, when we look back at anyone's life, your own life, at the end of the day, when your life is over, and we look back, you can judge the good things and the bad things that you've done, certainly. And each one of those, can be compartmentalized. And you can say, well, Chad did a great job here doing this, but boy, he really screwed the pooch at this moment, you know. And so certainly our historical leaders that we learn about in the history books and that we examine as historians, it's no different there in looking at their contributions to what they did for a very young and prospering country, to, you know, their home lives, to their slave ownership, to things like that. And so we have to look at this whole picture. And again, you don't erase it. It's a part of who they were. It's important to teach students about all of these things that happened again. So we don't repeat it. You know, we're living in a very, very interesting time now that, you know, when we're long gone, people will be two people doing a podcast about the time we're living in now in the future. And they'll certainly be judging all of us for the way we voted, for the way we rose up, for the way we conformed, you know, all sorts of things. So it's happening now, just as it happened, 200 some odd years ago.
Yeah, I think part of the problem, at least from my perspective, is everything now seems to be all or none. And so, like, when you look at, for example, Thomas Jefferson and say, oh, he was a slave owner, he's terrible. But like you just said, you have to take different aspects of his life and kind of balance them and weigh them against each other to get a full picture of the person. But for some reason, we just want, you know, I think you and I have had conversations off podcast, and I've talked with Kevin Huntsberger, the host of My 1-2-3 Cents. It's this whole thing where compromise seems to be a dirty word and it seems to be a word that no one wants to act upon because it is all or nothing. And I think that's a bigger issue of looking back at the past, of looking through the eyes of today and not being able to understand, like we've mentioned, the different cultural aspects or just the different attitude. And again, not saying that those attitudes were correct, it's just the way they were at the time.
Yeah, I mean, so I actually learned a lot in doing some research for this podcast. And I learned that this, you know, judging the past by, you know, through the lens of the present is actually a thing. It's called presentism. And it's, you know, judging the past not in an objective way, but viewed through a contemporary lens. And there's an author, David Fisher, that writes about this in a book, Historians' Fallacies. He calls this concept kind of akin to triumphalism. It's not a fun character on Sesame Street, but it's the belief that a social system should triumph overall, like at the rejection of all other viewpoints. And you see elements of this in presentism, this, you know, reimagining of the past to fit the needs of the present. You see it in some political parties right now. But, you know, the key is, like you said, it's you know, taking a holistic approach to looking at the past and not this singular vision that's either 100% right, 100% wrong. You have to examine the times. You have to examine the context, as with any issue, but in the past is no different.
Yeah, and in doing the research, and one of the topics that came up that I was thinking about when we were hashing out this idea is recently, let me pull up real quick so I can get the organization correct. It's the Association for Library Service to Children. They give out a yearly award, and it's always been, I guess, I don't know how long it's been going on, but Laura Ingalls Wilder it was the Laura Ingalls Wilder Award. And it has now become the Children's Literature Legacy Award for 2018 because they didn't like the way, and here it was about her Little House on the Prairie series. Here's the quote from the organization. To remove her name, to change the name of the award, it's, this decision was made in consideration of the fact that Wilder's legacy, as represented by her body of work, includes expression of stereotypical attitudes inconsistent with Association for Library Service to Children's core values of inclusiveness, integrity, and respect and responsiveness. And this is because the way she writes about Native Americans in her books. And again, she was writing these books back, I believe, in the 1800s, when there was a different attitude towards Indians and living on, you know, out in the West or in the prairies, I guess, in the little house. There's probably a different association with Indians at that time. So the way she would write, it would be like, you know, someone writing, I'm going to use, this may be a terrible, terrible, terrible example, but it would be like someone writing about Muslims today living in New York around 9/11. So I don't know. I think we definitely need to reevaluate the way that we judge a lot of things.
Sure. Let me play devil's advocate.
Okay.
For I will applaud the organization for crafting a statement and you know, making a formal announcement as to why they are changing the name. You know, it'd be different, I think, Chad, if they were trying to then get the books removed
mm-hmm.
because of the language, because of the tone, that sort of thing. They're not. They are just saying, you know, this the language contributed to the current, you know, racial stereotypes that Native Americans might still face. I mean, you look at what's happening right now with the voter suppression to Native Americans right now with the midterm elections, and the plight that they face right now is still so real and underreported and underrepresented. And, you know, so I think that just, you know, if the organization just changed the name of the award with no announcement, no rationale, then yes, I would question that. But again, this is that teachable moment that I think that they kind of presented in saying, you know, we're not happy with that because it doesn't meet our standards. We feel that it incorrectly portrays Native Americans, and so we're making this change. I think that that's a teachable moment that they saw that they tried to seize. So it's not erasing history. It's not pulling the books from shelves or any crazy push like that. And I think that's where the real danger comes, is where it's, we don't like this and we want it gone. We want it stricken from the record like it never existed. That's when you have the potential for then, you know, well, we're going to make the same mistakes because we can't look back and say, oh my gosh, this is the way, you know, Native Americans used to be portrayed in literature. How terrible. Let's not do this again.
Travis, I think I'm going to have to revoke your membership on this podcast because you actually just made valid points and something I hadn't thought of. And now I have to actually agree with you and say that was actually, looking at it that way, makes total sense. And we're not going to have controversy on this podcast if I actually admit to not to seeing something in a way that I hadn't originally looked at it. So,
well, I've got years of practice to persuade minds. So,
no, that's great. I actually, yes, when you were saying that, I'm like, yeah, that actually does make a whole lot of sense. And I hadn't taken it that way. So, I really need to come up with better examples if I'm going to put them on this show.
Well, no, that is a great, but that fed right into my earlier point. Yeah. So you brought it all full circle as far as, you know, how we are fractured and we are divided on so many issues. And how are we ever going to at least even begin to come back together? And if we don't choose to use these moments as teachable moments where we're, we can kind of look at things from a new perspective, as you know, as you just alluded to.
Yeah. All right. I'll try to do a non-awkward segue into teachable moments. The other topic, the next topic that I had on the list here is the recent comments by actresses Kristen Bell and Keira Knightley talking about telling their children fairy tales and how they kind of either change the ending or have a discussion about the actions in the fairy tale. And I believe one of the examples made was Snow White, when the prince comes and kisses her to revive her, and he doesn't ask permission. He just basically assaults her. And again, you know, in the time that we live now, in the Me Too movement, yes, maybe that isn't appropriate, but at the same time, Snow White was unconscious and couldn't give. And actually, he saved her life. It wasn't like she was unconscious and he took advantage of her, which is never appropriate. And we just want to throw that out to make sure that everyone is on the same page, that that's a bad decision making. And, you know, but if you're saving someone's life, it's a whole different situation.
Yeah, I'm not sure where to go on this one. And, you know, part of it is because we're two males talking the Me Too movement, and you know, certainly the Me Too movement, it crosses gender lines. You know, women are not the only gender that faces sexual assault, so it's not like we're not allowed to talk about it. But you know, for the most part, this is a female-driven movement, and as statistics will show, that it should be. You know, I think you have to look at the article of popular culture, you know, the fairy tale, and you have to ask yourself, what's the message that's being taught here, or being conveyed? You know, what are young minds going to absorb from this? And if it's something that's egregious, if it's something that's harmful, then yes, it should be reexamined and retold in a different way. If it's not, then, you know, if there's not a harmful message, if young males watching this are not going to be, you know, influenced to go do inappropriate things, then I think that it's fine the way it is. You know, that's my take. I think that it's, you have to look at the message being conveyed You have to look at the whole context of it all with the audiences. You know, what's the age of the audience? You know, how will they absorb that information at that age? And you know, so you have to look at the whole product. You know, that's really, I think, all of us, you know, is the message harmful? Could it be misconstrued as harmful in any way? And if so, I think it's okay to maybe take a look at repackaging it in a less harmful way.
Okay. I'm going to jump off from there. Thought that just came in, and I hope I can explain this properly. What is your thought on, because let's, you know, looking at the history of fairy tales or even now with like superheroes and things, the times in which these characters and stories were created was obviously a very heavy white male centric time, like, you know, white males top of the food chain basically. What is your thought on reimagining these stories to make them more either multicultured or you know, a more female-led protagonist? And I speaking more like, let's use Superman as an example. If they're going to make a new Superman movie and changing him into a different ethnic character,
I'm 100% on board with all of that. You know, I'm a huge Office fan, and children's stories and fairy tales in general are, if we look at the root of them, they're highly inappropriate for children.
True.
And you know, the episode of The Office, it's I want to say a Halloween episode, but it might have been a Thanksgiving episode where I think it was a Bring Your Kid to Work Day, and Dwight Schrute was reading from an old German fairy tale book that his grandma read to him, and it was just these, you know, just horrid tales of you know, children being dismembered because they ate too much sugar, that sort of thing. And I have an old bedtime storybook that my grandma read to me. It was a very Dwight Schrute moment, and I kept the book all these years. And then now that when I had a young son, now he's we're reading different material at night. But when it was fairy tale time, I pulled this old book out, and I thought, oh, I'm going to read the stories that grandma read to me. And I got halfway through the first one, and I realized how inappropriate it was. And you know, because it was a very old book. And so, and then when we go, we look at cultures, we look at genders. Certainly Hollywood still has a problem with, you know, telling stories from the white male protagonist, typically white straight male, is your hero. And I think that what Superman came from another planet and just happened to be a white male. Okay, there we go. So I think it's not representative of who we are. And I'm totally on board and hope that it continues even further. I love that Doctor Who is now a woman, and you know, let's keep that trend going.
Okay, because I know, like with the last Fantastic Four movie, Michael B. Jordan played Human Torch, and there was a little bit of an outcry over that because taking a white character, placing with an African American actor, and I know there's been talk, like with Spider-Man, there was a petition to get Donald Glover to play Spider-Man, and there you get that backlash from fans who say, no, this is, you know, these characters are 40 to 90 years old, these are who they are. Kind of like with James Bond in the same regard. It's like, these are who these characters are. Don't go changing them just to be politically correct. And I'm just curious if you were okay with that, or, and you apparently are, so.
And I think that it's, I hate that to hear that argument. I hate to hear that, you know, Idris Elba, because he has dark skin, can't play James Bond. Mm-hmm. You know, and the argument is a complete fallacy in general. What are we changing about the character? Nothing. Mm. Skin tone does not change the makeup of the character. And I don't like that argument at all. I think that it's very insensitive, and I wish that people could get past that.
Okay. Yeah. I know. And speaking of James Bond, there's also been the talk of doing a female version, Jane Bond. And the criticism is, no, it's James Bond. If you want to do Jane Bond, you can create a whole new character and do the same thing. Just you wouldn't have that, I guess, name brand recognition off the bat.
I think that, you know, I think people need to look around and realize that there's bigger problems in the world than if James Bond were all of a sudden a woman on our big screen, and maybe find other things to get upset about that actually can affect us in our lives.
Have you been on social media?
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I am of the opinion that if you have an established character, changing it, I guess, to fit in with just to be politically correct, I'm not okay with that. And that's more of just my stubbornness. But also, if they did, like, if Donald Glover would have played Spider-Man, I probably would have been there and enjoyed it because Donald Glover is a talented actor. I think it's more on the talent side than the color side.
Well, and I think, too, let's taking the term politically correct at this point, I think it needs to be reexamined a bit because if Hollywood makes a push to better represent the cultural makeup of its audience, that's not being politically correct. That's exactly what it's doing. It's trying to better represent its audience, and all of the different cultures that make up our country. Mm-hmm. And so I think that to say that it's, you know, they're doing it to be politically correct, I don't think that's a fair assessment to say. I think politically correct and almost, much like some of the ideas that we've talked about from the past that are no longer applicable, I think the term politically correct needs to take a look. I mean, certainly politics aren't correct right now in this country, so maybe politically correct, we need to take a look and reexamine that as well and maybe say cultural representation. I mean, I teach a class called Cultural Representation in Cinema, not Politically Correctness in Cinema, you know? So I think examining who we are as a culture. And, you know, there's an argument if we can get, you know, I don't like getting real political, but if we take a look at, you know, you hear a lot of, with the immigration issues right now, you hear a lot of defense of you know, stronger immigration laws, put up a wall in defense of protecting our culture. Well, what is our culture? If you take a look, you know, at our just look at our holidays. Let's just start there. You know, what's the culture of Christmas? Well, right now it's not spending time with your family on Thanksgiving to go get in line and shop. It's a culture of capitalism. If you look at the history of Halloween, which in other countries is a long-standing celebration of the dead returning, of celebrating the dead. In our culture, it was the current way we celebrate Halloween was started by the sugar industry.
Well, I was going to jump in and sarcastically say that the tradition of trick-or-treating is to ingrain kids with socialism, because you just go and knock on someone's door and they give you free stuff.
Well, yes, but it is also a culture of capitalism because it was the holiday. It was literally started by the sugar industry. If you, share the article with you.
Okay.
And so, what are we protecting? What are these great cultures that we're protecting when we say, oh, you know, build a wall and keep everybody else out because we're going to lose who we are? Well, who are we? What are these great cultures that the celebrations that we have? So, I think that. To then look at Hollywood and say, well, we need to protect who we are by, you know, continuing this, these characters that are old and stale and outdated, I think it's wrong.
No, you bring up a good point, and I think it kind of goes into our mindset. If you took a poll and ask people, like you said, like, what are the histories of holidays, or why do we do things that we are, that are just common knowledge in our society? I would probably guess that, I'm going to say 90% couldn't give you a solid answer. It would just be, well, this is how it's always been. And there is that factor, I think, in our society to, you know, a fear of change, a fear of growth, in a sense. It's just like, well, this is how it's always been, so this is how we're going to continue to do it. And, you know, I say our political makeup is the same way, where we go, okay, we're going to put the Republicans in charge for 4 to 8 years. They're going to not satisfy what we want. So then we're going to put Democrats in charge for 4 to 8 years. They don't satisfy what we want. So we're going to go back to the Republicans. And then our congresspeople are all, I think it's more of a name brand recognition when we go to the polls, as opposed to actually researching and trying to come up with the best candidate that will work. But it's tying it back into what you were saying. That's where I think our biggest fear lies, is we don't want to, I don't want a Jane Bond because that's different than what I am used to with James Bond. And I may actually have to open my mind and be receptive to something new.
100%. You know, we've seen now two, in our lifetime, two very successful political campaigns, one stolen directly from the other. Initially the Ronald Reagan Make America Great Again, and then now Donald Trump's. And both of those were harken back to this, you know, idyllic times, post-World War II, 1950s, prosperous America, where the rest of the world was essentially war-torn and had no economy, had no industry, and, you know, life was great here. Let's not talk about the sexism and the racism and the misogyny and everything else. Let's just, you know, it was great for white males. And so, you know, times were great back then. You know, I say that sarcastically.
Yeah, no, real quick, I want to jump in. Yes, because you and I, both born in the 70s, don't know what life was like before, other than through pop culture references or books. And so, yes, there is this glorification of this time, but was it really that great? Or, you know, what was life really like? It's kind of like the Wild West when you look at, you know, through movies. It's like, was that really a representation of what it was like at that time? Or is it the glorification and romanticized aspect of it?
Absolutely. And you, I think you got it spot on when you say that trickles over into other elements of, you know, don't change, you know, these key things that I'm used to. I'm going to vote based on that. I'm going to absorb, you know, the popular culture in that way. And, you know, it's going to drive a lot of the decisions that I make. And, we're certainly seeing a lot of that. And, look, I mean, youth culture eventually becomes nostalgia as the people that consumed the youth culture are no longer youths, and they're not. You know, we look at the revival of all the sitcoms, and, you know, we see a lot of networks. You know, one network in particular is Cozy TV. That's the name of the network, and it is older sitcoms. And, you know, Cozy TV, it's implying that, hey, watch us, watch these old sitcoms to you know, get that warm and fuzzy feeling of a bygone era where things were just, you know, much better. So certainly that's playing a role in everything that we're seeing in politics, in popular culture, and just in everyday society.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is true for you, but for me, when I look back, because being a child of the 80s, we've discussed 80s were the greatest decade. I have that romanticized feeling, too, about the 80s, because I was a kid. I didn't know what was actually going on in the world. You know, I would hear things about Iran-Contra, and I remember the Oliver North hearings being on TV, and Star Wars, and, you know, the Cold War and stuff. And it's interesting to go back and watch 80s movies and see how many have underlying themes of Russian invasion. But when I look back at that time, it's through the eyes of a child. It's through, like, you know, no responsibility, having fun, just play. Like, there's no... I couldn't write an authentic story from an adult point of view in the 80s because I don't know what was actually happening at that time.
That's awesome. And I have to stop myself and do the exact same thing. And I've said that to myself as well. Of you were a child, you didn't have all these, you know, concerns that, that adults face. And that's certainly a way that I think a lot of people, that's something that people miss when they go back and they, like you said, romanticize the past. And maybe even they go back even further. And if, you know, if you go back to your life as a kid and it was so great, surely everything before it was great too. And so it's just now, it's just everything's going wrong now, but everything was great in the past. And I certainly that's a not the best way to look at it.
Exactly. All right. Well, I think we've hit some good points. And I forgot to put this disclaimer at the beginning. So hopefully if you're still listening, Travis has more knowledge than I do, and obviously probably does more research than I do, but don't take what we say as facts or like authoritative voices. We're here to provide a discussion, make you think, just try to, again, get out of comfort zone, get out of the idea of, well, this is how I've always thought, so I'm going to continue to think. Engage in conversation, and especially find people that don't agree with you. And have a conversation. Don't yell. Don't fight. Don't go into it trying to change people's mind. Just have a conversation to see where people, why, try to find out why people have opinions or thoughts that they do.
Well said. I couldn't have said it any better myself. Perfect, Chad.
You probably could, but I take the compliment. So that's going to wrap it up. Next month we'll have a whole new, I don't know, it'll be December. Maybe we should try to come up with some holiday-themed ideas.
Love it.
We can break down the history of Saint Nick and try to figure out. Hey, probably not.
We just talked about people, you know, what'd you say, 80-90% not knowing the background of holidays. So maybe we drop some knowledge on them next month.
Maybe. But I am going to promote, we've discussed this, in March of 2019, it will be our Corey Haim retrospect episode, honoring the life of Corey Haim. And I'm challenging you, Travis, because I want to do this myself, is to go back and watch as many Corey Haim films as you can to get prepared and study the au revoir of Corey Haim.
Challenge accepted, my friend.
All right, Travis, thanks for coming. Again, you can find him on Twitter at Pop, P-O-P, Cult, C-U-L-T-I-Q. You can find me at Chad Smart. It's pretty simple. Smart is spelled just the way you would think, S-M-A-R-T. I don't know why everyone ask me to spell it, but as always, as we end the show, question everything, and we do mean question everything, try to figure out what's going on, and always do something positive.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.